Hey everybody, this is Stu Smith along with Jeff Nichols. This is the Tactical Fitness Report with Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols. Jeff Nichols is a former Navy SEAL and very involved in tactical fitness world. I actually met him a couple of years ago at the Tactical Strength and Conditioning Conferences held by the National Strength and Conditioning Association, which, by the way, I'm sure Jeff will attest to this. If you're serious about tactical fitness, you really need to hit these conferences the units of study, because they are real, it's science-based, and you will learn so much. I go there to speak. Jeff goes there to speak. Jeff's also done a really cool TED Talk, which is definitely a bucket list item for anybody in the business of speaking. But yeah, I mean, I go there to speak as well, and I probably watch at least a dozen other speakers and learn so much from the best in the business. So that's my plug for the NSCA. But anyway, Jeff has a great program down in Virginia Beach. How many years did you do in the
season? I spent 11 years on both coasts.
Okay.
And I started out Team 5 and then ended up in Virginia Beach my last 8 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Jeff and I come from, you know, similar backgrounds up until we graduated BUDS, because when I, and you kind of think about this separated by 9/11, because when I was in the military, you know, I started training for the military in the 80s, which is a completely different subset of exercise back then. I mean, there were no, you know, tactical fitness programs. It was all bodybuilding. Pretty much that was it. Joe Weider handbooks, Arnold Schwarzenegger, encyclopedia.
Yeah. You know,
it was all bodybuilding. I was lucky to have a powerlifting coach and football-oriented background growing up. So I learned a lot about what strength was. And that built, you know, enabled me to kind of take that strength foundation and move it into the tactical professions and build upon that. Jeff has a similar background, but Jeff has probably what I call the perfect background for being a BUD student. And we just talked about this a minute ago, but you know, I've always said that a wrestler who could swim could crush BUDS. And that is what he did. Go ahead and speak about your background.
Yeah, Jeff. I think, you know, if unbeknownst to me, really, I grew up in Iowa, wrestling is king. At a very young age, I started swimming because my mother had two brothers that drowned, actually. So my mother was hell-bent on making sure that I was a proficient swimmer. So I actually remember swimming before I could walk. I don't recall it, but this, as my mother tells me, I was in the swimming pool swimming before I could really – I was still crawling. So long of the short is, I got to BUDS, you know, again, growing up in Iowa. I wrestled since I was a child, and I got there, and I think that – yeah, that maybe that combination. Like, I wasn't the best runner. I was proficient for sure. I was a little heavier. I was 185 pounds when I went through BUDS. But for me, being that proficient in the water and being used to being uncomfortable that wrestling has done for me, and also kind of like the both, like, you may be in a relay event, but you're standing there in a one-inch Speedo, right? You know, we talk about wrestling being a team sport, and it is, but it's just you and the mat, and you have to deal with it. So now, is it a guarantee for success? Certainly it's not. And I think a lot of that too, what Stu and I were talking about, I came in after, when I was in the middle of grad school, like I joined the Navy, and that biological maturation for me, I think was really important. Will I admit that I think I would quit if I had gone from high school into BUDS at 18? I probably wouldn't say that I would, but I think I would have had a much more difficult road. College for me was a really good maturation process for me. So
that's the same way. You know, yeah, I agree with you a lot on that one, Jim. I mean, I'm sorry. I have another guy I do these with that his name's Jim. So sorry, Jeff. But I have another story exactly the same way. I was 22 when I went to BUDS after college. I know for a fact I wouldn't have made it through BUDS at 18, because I left high school as a powerlifting football player, was going to play football in college. That didn't happen. Long story short, I just basically didn't make the team, and they were taking no walk on. So, but I wound up playing rugby, and had a good time playing rugby. And I slowly started learning what getting in shape meant during those 4 years. You know, I thought everything over 100 yards was long distance, you know, when I was 18. And, you know, a mile and a half was definitely long distance. And if you're going to try to get two buds, your first thing that you have to do is pass that 500-yard swim, push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, and a mile and a half run. Yeah. As simple as that. That is my two buds, you know, programming. You know, and Jeff and I were talking about this too. There's really kind of three different levels of tactical fitness out there. You know, you got two, the training, you know, which is usually a fitness test that, you know, gets you to the training. And also, you know, medical and background checks and all that type of stuff. But, you know, then you have to prepare yourself to get through the training. And I've always used the FITS principle for that one. I think back in my day, we called it FIT principle, F-I-T-T, and then they changed it to FITS principle, which is frequency, intensity, time, and type or specificity.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, what are you specifically going to endure? You need to start preparing your body for that. You know, if you're coming with a background of, you know, a non-lifting background, you should probably start building some strength. And, you know, if you're an endurance guy, you know, I think I've always said a few times, or people have come back to me after buds and have said, it really is a running man's game out there. And it is a running man's game, but at the same time, there's a lot more to it. You know, I've seen runners not make it through buds that can crush a 4 mile timed run in 24 minutes, but yeah, put them under a log in a boat and they get crushed.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen swimmers who are great swimmers, but, you know, put them on land where there's gravity and they're not used to running in gravity, shin splints right off the start, you know, or, you know, stress fractures. And then I've seen guys like me, the power lifter guy, you know, and football player guy that, you know, great under a log, felt like a great little bicep workout sometimes, a little shoulder workout. Wasn't that hard under a log. I won't say it was easy. You know, anything, you do anything for 12 hours, you know, during Hell Week, and it's hard. And, you know, you just, you know, you're able to handle that, but being heavier makes it harder on the obstacle course, makes it harder on rope climbs, makes it harder on pull-ups, makes it harder on running. You know, all those little things, everybody has a weakness at buds. And I think that's one thing that Jeff and I come from the same school of thought is, you know, you can't be great at one thing. You really have to be good at all of them.
Yeah. You know, we tend to favor what we're proficient at.
Yes.
And that's no different than anyone preparing for buds. And the way that I think the best way to say it is, like, I think in the fitness world, because it sells to be polarizing, in our world, being polarizing does not at all improve accomplishment, right? The sense of it, or the literal, the guarantee, or the closest guarantee we can get is get through it. But that's the typical sort of trend so far, is like, well, if you're really good at being strong, be strong. If you're really, and it's you got to swallow your ego a little bit. And I'm 240 pounds. It would be ignorant for me to say, you should be like me and go through buds. That's just stupid. That would be a bad idea. I would also say, if you're 115 pounds and you run like the wind, right? I looked up what the average body weight is. Googled, hey, what's the average body weight of a world-class runner? A world-class or elite is the top 16 in any given sport, anyone in the world at a given time. The average body weight is 106 pounds. So, like, we look at, like, well, I really need to run. Yes, you do. If you really start refining, again, that's where kind of our biological maturation for me was important. Like, at 18, I don't think I had the physical capacity to endure that volume. At 22, I did. Yes. Not to mention the mental capacity to receive that negative feedback, as we talked about. That's important, too. If someone is not used to just someone telling them that they're screwed up, even though it's, you know, for a lot of guys, I came from a great household. I grew up in the Partridge family, essentially.
Yeah, same here.
But it was strict, appropriately strict. But being an athlete and doing those particular sports and going to college and being a college athlete and then being a strength coach at college and teaching, like, it gave me a sense of, like, well, I showed up to 188 buds students, And I felt like I had the emotional stability to handle it. Because some of the Buzz instructors were my age. Because I was 22, there was two instructors that were first phase instructors were my age.
Wow.
So I felt like I had the capacity to relate with them. Certainly, we weren't hanging out and watching right. anything like that. But I felt like I could handle it. If those people that were teaching me had endured it, certainly I could.
I tell you what, we had a few. First of all, we had a lot of 18-year-olds in our Buds class, and you probably started out with that. And that's just the way the Navy is. They pull you from the street and take you straight to SEAL training. And unfortunately, a lot of those guys don't make it after Hell Week. And you see your classes, your age, you know, average increases significantly after Hell Week. I remember, I think we probably had two or three 18-year-olds by the time we graduated. But I will say this, those kids that graduated 18 years old are remarkable people. I mean, yeah. One of the 18-year-olds that graduated with me, was the honor man in our Buds class. I mean, just an incredible guy. And then 2 years later, he went, or maybe 3 years later. So he was 18, 19, 20, 21, 21 years old. He was a freshman at the Naval Academy. So he got to go to the Naval Academy wearing his trident, which was very rare to see. And that guy had a double major, engineering, and math or physics. He played in a band, like a rock band, and he played two sports. I mean, he just crushed the Naval Academy. Then he went back to the SEAL team as an officer. And it was funny because his Buds interview, whenever we were interviewing him, you know, all the candidates for to go to Buds with the detailer and everything, officer, community manager, were like, so what team do you want to go to? You know, there was no question whether or not this guy was qualified to go, you know. Anyway, the remarkable young man. But unfortunately, you know, you see a good 80% of them, maybe even 90% of those guys not make it through. And so if you want to read a little bit more about it, I wrote an article called The Perfect Storm for Failure. And there's a whole lot of things that can occur to that 18-year-old kid who leaves home, leaves his girlfriend, leaves his family, you know, living in a new town, and so much other things that occur to you all at once. And, you know, like Jeff said, having some, you know, few years on you achieving other things, you know, away from home might be a good call for you as you prepare.
Right.
So Jeff, you want to talk about a little bit of some of your stuff? I've been cruising around the internet. I saw your YouTube channel that you have. It's, you know, really cool stuff. What Jeff does is he really puts science into his workouts. And what I mean by that is, you know, I probably write about do these workouts, and they're fairly general, and you have to make adjustments to it, you know, depending on your fitness level. But what Jeff does is kind of gives you the why of these workouts. And one of my favorite ones that I saw him do the other day was his running protocol with, you know, 300 meter measure. You talk a little bit about that and, you know, why you like that type of running versus, you know, maybe setting people on a high volume mileage running program.
Yeah. I think, it kind of touched right on it. For me, historically, United States, I've seen around the world a good bit in other coaches, institutions, while I was in the Navy and afterwards and before. United States has always been really good at coaching, and then trying to take some of that science that Europe is so well known for. Obviously, they have good coaches as well, but trying to blend them together, because now we have, again, unlike where I was in high school and you were in high school, where my direction was muscle and fitness and Joe Weider and those guys. We can start blending them together. And I was always the kid to, again, to your point, it was like, why? And I would just annoy the hell out of my teachers, right? And they just send me off to get them out of their hair. And it always stuck with me. It stuck with me in the teams. I really need to understand why because you get to a point in the professional world and especially in the teams where you're like, when you become senior, you don't question authority for the sake of being a thorn in someone's side. But to really understand what is being asked of you, it's a matter of here's my expectations, here is your expectations. We've got to have some common ground instead of just unlike somebody. So that's where you and I get along so well, is that we have a real common ground and we need to blend them. And that's what we talked about the other day, is that there is enough people wanting to go through training, and there's a handful of us that are really trying to do the ethical way of guiding these folks to get through. So I looked at it from a high performance sports world, like, okay, what is Steve Prefontaine? If you don't know who Steve Prefontaine is, please look it up, right? Yeah. Or any Olympic athlete, Lolo Jones's running program I've seen, and a bunch of others, and I've been around those institutions, Olympic institutions. And I wanted to say, well, why are they running this way? And so I looked at it like, if you take an individual that has not the best training regimen, we just instantly throw them into, hey, this week you got to run 25, 34, 30 miles, just because it's pretty easy to do. You just go, hey, here's your program and go. It can be on paper. That's not to say that there's not a lot of, hey, well, if this happens, do this. Any training program should follow with, it depends.
Yes.
Right? And it's not like you have to do this is the only thing. So take it for what it is, because we have to create a starting point. If someone's starting point is a 30 mile a week, right? That's a starting point. And then we've got to assess and evaluate and make changes potentially. And for me, I look at it and go, well, if I'm looking at physics, I'm looking at force through the ground over distance. It's going to give me a number. Let's say I'm going to go run 5 miles. Based off of my body weight and the distance I'm going to cover, my feet hitting the ground is going to create X ground force. We don't need to do the math necessarily. But we say, okay, well, if I'm not ready to run 3 miles or 4 miles, well, how do I create a similar force? Well, I just speed myself up, create more ground force over a shorter period of time. Now I've got a similar workload. And because if I say, hey, I got to have you go out and do 5 miles, for some people, like we talked about, like I thought, like you said, like a mile and a half to me is a long way. It's 2 miles, what a long run that is.
Yes.
But if I say, hey, listen, let's break it up into intervals, where just like a child, it sounds crazy, because if you give a child in sport very specific biomechanic instructions, they go, I don't, like baseball, keep your hands inside the ball, do this. You just go, hey, get your hands up and swing as hard as you can. They'll get their hands back and they'll go, right? If I say, you know, hey, listen, because they understand the concept of fast. Run as fast as you can, throw as fast as you can, swing, whatever.
Right.
So if you tell someone, hey, for 300 meters, I want you to run as hard as you can relative to your capability, that's a guideline for success. Like, that's where establishing a start point. And then we just see how long it takes, okay? And that will help us determine, aside from heart rate, again, there's the what ifs, right?
Sure.
Heart rate monitor is a totally different ballgame. That really wires it down. But if we say, hey, run a 300, see how long it takes you. See if you can repeat that 300 for that same plus or minus a couple seconds. If you can, what it tells me is that your body has the ability to recover.
Yeah.
Repeat, recover. So we could say lactate buffering, but we'll just say recover. If your body is showing me as a coach or a programmer that you can do repeat bouts of intense exercise, now I'm seeing that you have a capacity to run greater distance. So that's what we're doing. Now, how do we increase capacity to recover? Well, we've got to challenge the organism really aggressively, but let it recover. Challenge it aggressively, let it recover. That in conjunction with, hey, on the third day, go for a 3-4 mile run at an easy pace. They complement each other really, really well. So we don't want to just do track works. We don't want to just do long runs. We don't want to just lift weights and just do cap. They all have got to create this really synergistic system that makes us, for lack of a better term, like a decathlete. We've really got to exhibit range of motion with high power. Okay, we've got to have some endurance. We've got to have some speed. We've got to have muscular strength. We've got to have strength endurance. We've got to exhibit all those sort of things if we want to alleviate some of the stress that Buds is going to place upon us. So what I do is I just create a program based off of, again, the program that I've stipulated is for preparation for the mile and a half.
Right.
We need to throw in some little bit longer runs in there to accumulate some work volume that Buds is going to place upon us. Right. So I'm looking specifically at the mile and a half PST. Okay. So that program I wrote out is to get an individual to peak, right, for that mile and a half. And just doing some math and some metrics and putting it in a very easily form, not to mention putting it on a track, hopefully it's rubberized, to minimize some of the trauma from that ground force. That's the, if you have to do it on asphalt or concrete, great. Ideally, it would be on a nice grass field or on a turf. Because again, we are trying to eliminate, which is one of the bigger components of one of the benefit, the mutual benefit of sprint work and long distance running is to help alleviate, not eliminate, stress fractures and shin splints.
Yes.
Too much of one will instantly cause it, and too much of the other will cause it as well. They need to marry each other out. And so it's not, and again, for me, for someone that was 185 pounds, I was 230 pounds when I left college to go to Buds. I had to slim down.
Yes.
So what I did is I looked at the track team at Troy University where I was at, and I was a strength coach there. He's like, well, hey, if I have someone coming, I need to drop some pounds to keep their force production up. We need to work through some intervals. And that's what essentially it tends to be, high-intensity interval training for running. And I slimmed down. I went from 230 pounds to a ridiculously lean 190. Like everybody else, I got sick at boot camp, lost a bunch of weight, and then had to put it back on an A school. But it for me, it was a really like, wow, like, I mean, I can prepare for a 3-mile run if I do this really intense 2,400 meter. And then occasionally, hey, I'm going to go out like my fourth or fifth track workout. I'm going to go run around campus for 35 minutes, just nice and easy.
Right.
They complement each other very, very well. And I wasn't the best of runners. Swimming, yes. Swimming, I was all day cruising.
Yeah.
Running, I needed to work at it. So I'm looking at this going, a lot of people can just run. But then you apply that stress that Buds puts on you, that cardiac and that emotional and that biological stress. Some people may not get that on the long runs. So let's just hammer them on a track. And then, right, we want to stress inoculate. If we can have them encounter some of the stress, this is pulling right out of Dave Grossman.
They're trying to love it. Great.
Brilliant, man. If we can inoculate some of that stress early on, then we can reap some of the benefits when we're actually doing it, like in Buds, right? Let's prepare. Let's not have them experience that really acute stress. Let's not wait until they get to Buds. Let's try to do it early.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love that one. In fact, I tell you who would really love your program, your 300-meter protocol, you know, mile-and-a-half program, would be the FBI agents, and now it's the DEA. DEA does the same test.
Yep.
So pretty much it's the Cooper's law enforcement fitness test.
For
and
sure,
probably about 50% of the law enforcement agencies in the United States use that 300-meter sprint and a mile and a half push-ups and sit-ups.
Yep.
You know, and
I think they're doing a lot of shuttle runs now. Yeah, I think a buddy of mine that trained for the DEA here, he just passed it, and it was a 300-meter shuttle repeater.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a double 300.
Did great.
Yeah.
Awesome. And he was a proficient distance runner. And the first time he ran it, he just hit a wall. Because if you take a 3-mile run, for example, this is my thoughts behind it, and this is how I did the math. If you take someone at 3 miles and you take their average cardiac, right, what their heart rate's doing in relation to their capacity or their velocity, right? They're really only running at about an average of 75, 80% of their max velocity, if they're lucky, 3 miles.
Sure.
In a sprint, if we're running 100% at their capability and you do those repeats, now if you stretch that out, you take away the rest periods, you say, hey, just run 75%. Now the body can buffer. It can recover as it's moving over that distance. And that's the thing what people do is they stretch that 3 miles into 5 and that 5 into 7, thinking that's going to really, really narrow down that mile and a half. It can, but if you have not stressed yourself out beyond or close to what you're going to experience in that time run, that mile and a half time run in Buds, your body defaults to what it knows. It defaults to a lower heart rate with stretched out cardiac output. So we need both.
Yes.
Not just one. We do need both.
Yeah.
This is just, it also, for people that love to run, this gives them an opportunity to do some other forms of running that complements what they're already trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, one of the biggest questions I get, I'm sure you get, how much should I run every week?
Yeah.
And what's the answer?
It depends.
It depends.
Yeah. Right?
It really depends on your base. You know, where are you running now? How much have you been running in the last 2 or 3 months? Right. If that's zero, I mean, you really have to baby step your way yes. up to 25, 30 miles a week. It's not for something sure. you just jump into even a month. I mean, you're looking at a 2-3 month process to build up to that.
Yeah.
You may be starting out at 5-10, you know, miles a week for the first couple of months, you know, working on your speed. That's critical, you know, and then, you know, some distance and your longest distance run at that level is probably going to be a mile and a half.
Sure.
You know, and then that's stretching it, you know, on some protocols, you know, will not even have you running that far. And they'll have you running every other day, maybe doing a hard non-impact Tabata interval, you know, it, you know, in between, you know, especially if you're susceptible to shin splints or knee issues or overweight and, yeah. you know, you're really going to put the force, you know, stresses on yourself if you're trying to lose weight at the same time. So yeah, the answer is it depends. You know, how much should you run a week? It depends.
Yeah, there's one thing we know that doesn't work, and that's not being able to run, right? So if someone's like, well, I got to put these miles in, and it's a little bit overwhelming for them, and they're like, well, I'm just not going to do that part of the program because this, again, we're looking at things that we need to, because, again, it's the tactical theme is like, you don't have a choice. You've got to do it.
Yeah.
And if you get acclimated to, well, I can, this can wait. That becomes a big issue emotionally when you get to Bud. So if that, and that's the beauty too, if it's like, man, like I'm really eating up these miles and it feels good and it's working for me. But let's say you have a hard day at work or college or whatever it is, and you're like, man, I just do not feel like, how many times you see guys, men and women training for a marathon and go, today's the 18 miler. It is. I am dreading that. Right. We'll go, okay, well, like if it's really affecting your nervous system, well, just push that a day or two out, do some track work, do some pool work, but prepare for it. We just don't want to, well, sometimes it's a good time just to do nothing. But if we need to get the volume in, we need to get the volume in.
Yeah.
Whether it's longer distance running or it's track work or anything else, pool work, whatever, but bike work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. I get anything.
Yeah. How about this common question? Daily PT. You know, I see a lot of people doing hundreds of push-ups every day, hundreds of pull-ups every day, back-to-back-to-back days, and they do this for a, you know, significant period of time, and you're going to see negative results. I mean, probably your first initial couple of weeks, you'll probably see some growth and some increases, just overload principle, but eventually it's going to start going down the other side of that bell curve and, you know, seeing negative results. That's one of my probably biggest pet peeves when people email me and they say, hey, I'm doing 500 pushups a day, doing 250 pull-ups a day and dips. You know, what's wrong?
Yeah. And those things are even simpler with math.
Yes.
Right. We're looking at Newton's second law, force equals mass times acceleration. If your body mass as a human isn't constantly in variety, or the mass you're moving, your body isn't going to adapt to those. So your nervous system go, well, If I'm every day, I'm hitting 70 pushups, I'm like, why am I not getting more? Well, because your body mass, and that's not to say throw on a weight vest and those sort of things, because we're talking about biomechanics, not that they're bad. Again, I'm not speaking in absolutes, but one of my Buzz instructors always said, variety is the spice of life. Okay. So if we are eliminating variety from our planes of movement, our energy systems, and all these sort of things, our work capacity, then we are limit. And then we're just in this wedge, and we're like, that's our limit. You've reached your physiological limit. That's why you're not doing any more. So we've got to create some variety.
Yeah.
never to not again, we don't want to eliminate calisthenics. That's not it at all.
Right.
Understanding, we're talking about optimization. If calisthenics was the way to prepare for the NFL, Major League Baseball, Buds, and every other Olympic training facility in the world, we would be out of a job, and every weight equipment company in the world would be out of a job. Okay. We need to substitute or supplement at times, okay? We need to create different loads and varieties and planes of movement. And that's where I say, that's where I kind of said before, you don't want to be 200, unless you're like, I'm only 5'10", 5'11". If you're 6'5", you might be, I know one guy that went to Buds in 230, 235, right?
Yeah.
He's 6'5". That's a big mass to carry, but he can swim, boy, size set. Like, I have a guy right now that played offensive lineman at ODU, whose dad's a 3-star. He was the superintendent at the academy. Admiral Mewborn.
Yeah.
His son finished at 300 pounds. He's down to 250. Couldn't do a pull up. He's at 17 now.
Damn.
Right. Granted, we had to drop some of his body mass and work through some of his intervals and clean him up. But what a great, great young man he is. Right. No surprise the cloth he's cut from, certainly. But we've got to look at how do we increase performance, but how do we optimize it? So understanding people are a little bit hesitant to do what they're not familiar with. If people aren't familiar with going to a weight room or a gym or whatever you want to call that, there's some hesitancy there. But we need to work through some of that stuff. We need to get into the machines. We need to get under the bar. Not exclusively.
Right.
But we need to break up. And that's what P90X made its millions, right? Body confusion. I mean, as simple as that is, we need to create variety.
Yeah.
Variety is very, very valuable, especially in a tactical population. So that's kind of my, without doing the math necessarily, that's my short answer.
That's a great one, and you're so right. And now here's another level to that same question, and I get this one often too, that, you know, they lift your Monday, Wednesday, Friday, then they do their calisthenics Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. But if you look at the volume that they're doing and the exercises that they're doing, they're really never resting any muscle groups that entire week.
Yep.
You know, so they're still doing upper body calisthenics and upper body lifts. Yeah, they may be doing some full body lifts too. But, you know, that type of volume, you know, a day off in between the weights shouldn't be working that same muscle group with more calisthenics.
For sure.
You know, especially at this kind of volume. If you're doing 10 or 20 push-ups to warm up,
yep,
that's a different animal. But you're talking hundreds of push-ups or, you know, 100 pull-ups in a workout, you know, that requires the same recovery that you would do with a weight training program.
Yeah, certainly. We want a good buddy of mine, Cal Dietz. Mm-hmm. He is really famous for saying, we want to stress the organism out to create a mad adaptation. However, if our stress is beyond our capability to heal, we're just in perpetual, we're in a hamster wheel.
Yes.
And we've got to here's my soapbox speech. If we were hired in this performance world in sport and we were to do this sort of hamster wheel training with our athletes, we would very quickly run into a lot of non-contact injuries.
Yes.
We would just see a ton of hamstring issues, shoulder issues, all these sort of things, and we would get fired. My point is that in the sports world, the methodology is laid out. Now, there is a big difference at times in sport and the tactical, but my point is there is a plan. Buds, the process and the planning that goes into that is very finite, and it yields a really great result. So we can't just randomize training, right? That's my point overall. It's like, although the reactionary side of the tactical, like we don't know necessarily what we're going to encounter on a mission. It's random, kind of. But that doesn't mean we can't optimally prepare for it. Buds, albeit a little bit pretty chaotic, but there are milestones. There are very clear milestones. And there's this huge historical pool of people completing the training. So for us to approach it like we don't know how to train for it is a little bit ignorant these days. Like just this maddening tire flips and body armor rucks and all these sort of things, all of them are great. But understand that if we are not optimizing the organism through appropriated stress, then we're just going to overtrain.
Yes.
And Buds is going to do that. Like that's the test. If this isn't a parochial study in terms of learning a language or mathematics, if the physical body shows up to Buds overtasked, now granted, you know, there's boot camp and some other things in between it. But if you show up to Buds overtasked and overtrained, when that, because day one, it's game on, yes. Right? It's a absolute like hair on fire menagerie at Buds. And it stays like that up into and through Hell Week, right? If you can't handle the physical stress because you showed up already 70%, 30% depleted,
yeah.
That's a tough nut to crack. Okay. So what we're trying to do is train our ass off as hard as we can, let it recover. Yes. Repeat, right? Then we just stair step up. It's not this, oh, this peak, he's huge peaks and valleys. We want to peak, easy, ease out, peak up again. We need to do that. And if it's just constant overload, that's what Buds is.
Yeah.
But even if you've ever seen, and you may have, you've seen the manual of Buds, like day one, week one, day, like it's tiered. It's chaos. Yes. As it is. It's planned.
Yes, it is planned to the rep and to the time. And
absolutely.
Even the water temperature and how long you're going to sit in it.
Yeah, and yeah. So because after years and years of doing it, they know what the max is. Yeah, and it's brilliant. It's an absolute brilliant system because it will yield individuals that this community is willing to invest time and money in to train. That's what it is. It's deselection. Buds is not a training program.
Yeah.
It deselects to get to the individuals. If you train so fervently before you get there inadequately, you've almost already deselected yourself. So we've got to help them help manage people so they don't. Already, because there are a number of people that I think show up overtrained, and had they not been overtrained and injuries start creeping, because you're never going to get time off in Buds, right? Unless you're in the fall where there's Christmas and stuff. But let's say you sprain your ankle, you may or may not get rolled, but you're not going to take. They're not going to just let you hang out. You're never going to omit that training time. You're never going to get that. So don't show up one foot in the grave. Yeah. That's the big thing.
Yeah, you definitely have to learn how to taper. You know, taper yep. and recover, and, you know, it's all part of the system. Well, Jeff, I'd say we've gone for about 40 minutes already. I mean, there's so much that I think you and I can talk about.
For sure.
And I don't want to overload our listeners into more stuff, but maybe the next time we can talk about maybe the difference between what I see are three, and maybe even there's a fourth type that I just figured out of tactical fitness, tactical preparation. So you got the training, like we talked about, like how do I get into FBI Academy? How do I get to Buds, right? And then you got to get through the training. You got to look at the specifics of what you're about to endure. And then, you know, people look at you, and, you know, they see you doing these cool workouts and, you know, and lifting weights and getting big and strong. You're really, you know, you're active duty / retired phase right now from the tactical profession.
Right.
You know, and so I see a lot of confusion, too, with, you know, guys seeing really big SEALs and Special Forces guys working out, you know, on YouTube or whatever, and they're jacked. I mean, they're probably 220 plus, you know, just muscled up, and, you know, they start doing those type of workouts to prepare for Buds, you know. So you just have to know that there are workouts that will get you to the training, through the training, and then once you're an active duty operator, now you got scientists there to prepare you. That was one of the differences, too, between your generation and mine is, you know, we just had some Master Chief, who was the fittest guy in the team, PT the crap out of us year after year after year. And I mean, they were great workouts. They were mostly gut checks, you know, and we'd always do a crazy payday PT workout that took from 8 o'clock till noon to finish.
Yep.
You know, and it was just, yep. You know, just there wasn't a program. Now there are actual exercise scientists who coach professional athletes and Olympians. And, you know, they're some of the smartest people in human performance that are there at the team. And that's what people see, you know, the results of. They see these big muscular, you know, special operators doing their job now in a continuous combat environment for the last 16 years. And there's a lot to what active duties guys need. They need, you know, strength. They need maintenance. They need recovery. They need stress mitigation. I mean, so that's a whole different level of tactical fitness than the to and the through training. And then you got the retired guy who's just trying to not hurt every day.
Yeah.
You know, so I was thinking the other day, I said there may be four different groups of people, you know, that are in different stages of tactical fitness. And I think you and I could, like I said, we could beat each one of those topics up for half an hour easy.
Yeah, no, I think it just, we could certainly save those for another time. But I think because making sure that we do delineate that there are phases and that people are in a position to evaluate what phase they are in, because it also may change pre and post deployment.
Sure.
As well.
Yeah, so, that's right. Yeah, your active duty training, absolutely.
It's a different ball game, right? And then you have that post-injury. At what point do you bridge back into high performance post-injury? Obviously, you know, clinically, surgeries and so forth, the PTs, they say, hey, you're fit for duty. But where is that new point of assessment? That's what I say is, like, with programming, there's no bad program. Once you complete the program, now we have a point of assessment. Now we got to make some adjustments.
Yeah. That's really good. Hey, tell real quick about the social media programming that we're going to be involved in.
Yeah, a couple places you can reach me. My own Instagram, Jeff CSCS, is my Instagram handle. You can find me on Facebook by name. Also, a good friend of mine who is the proprietor and creator of Only Easy Day. It's the web, Facebook and Instagram just has a bunch of photos. This is my bud's class, and he's been managing that site for about 8 years. He asked me to kind of step in, and he's got some other business ventures. He's just trying to keep up with it. So you can find me on there. I try to answer as many questions as I can ethically, and I will. I'll try to keep my opinion really removed from that. I don't talk about SEAL stuff. I think that's where Stu and I definitely, I think, really come to terms with, is that's something that's really earned and not given. Now, Bud's in preparation for it all day, certainly, and we're happy to do that. So there's some, just check out the websites. I'm easy to get a hold of if you have any questions. My programming is on the Train Heroic app, and we can go from there. But it's, again, this is really, the pitch isn't anything other than Stu and I very much believe that there's enough people between he and I and the multitude of other people training tactical people that what we just need to do is get together in team, just because that's where we come from, our team. You know, our team is good at resolving issues and creating solutions, and that is where Stu and I are sitting. We are trying to resolve issues and create solutions for an organization that we believe and love. So that's our goal here.
Yep. Very well put. Yeah, and don't forget, Jeff is in Virginia Beach. Got a great program, Virginia High Performance, VirginiaHP.com. This is his website. I'll put all this info in the description on the YouTube video as well. I'm in Maryland, right outside of Annapolis, and we run a program called the Heroes of Tomorrow, which is a free program. We work out 2 hours a day from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m., 6 days a week, you know, different things every day, and we run, we swim, we lift, we PT, and it's set up in a nice little periodized program. And it's for anybody. Yeah, anybody who wants to serve, you know, military, law enforcement, firefighter. And we get a lot of spec ops guys that come in because we do swim every day. So it's
We find – it's funny, like, we start finding these commonalities between people like us, because the same, like, – every day here at 4 o'clock, we do the same sort of methodology. We're trying to scoop. We don't have a pool here, but just down the street, the rec center, and trying to scoop in some local entities that will support it. I mean, the YMCA does officially, they support the DEPS program. We're not officially tied into that, but we train about, we're up about 14 guys right now training for various organizations.
That's awesome.
I think it's interesting we all end up doing the same thing. So
yeah, we really do. And you know, like I said, I also coach at the Naval Academy. All those kids that are trying to go for special ops, they created a spec ops team, and you know, so I get a lot of great ideas on all different levels of fitness. Sorry, you hear my dogs in the backyard.
No worries. You probably hear the jets flying over me. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Jeff. So we'll do this again. I really enjoyed having you on and just being a part of whatever you're doing, because I love watching you speak. You speak so intelligently, and you put science into some of this that, you know, I have probably neglected to do in my last 20 years of doing this. I just, you know, not explaining the why, I think, is very important. Explaining the why is very important. I have not explained the why often in a lot of my writings. And I find it, you know, fascinating, because I'm a man of science as well. And, you know, this is science. It's physiology. It's yeah. Physics. It's not, you know, it's not muscle confusion. You know, even though it is, it's not.
Yeah.
So it's really good. Really good being able to do anything with you, because I think you're brilliant in the business. And I even quoted you in one of my articles for military.com, talking about your planes of movement. You know, if you don't think movement patterns are important, you know, I think it was the lug nut. Analogy. Yeah. How did you put that again?
I use that a lot. I think that a lot of people, if they have movement issues or force production issues, put it in context to your vehicle. You could loosen the lug nuts on one or all of your tires, drive in a straight line at a very slow pace. You may not notice it, but the moment you change direction, accelerate or decelerate, you'll know right away that you've got some issues with that alignment. And the human body is the same way. It's just the human body is it's a master at compensating.
Yes.
We just want to get all of you early on programming appropriately, so you don't really have to compensate. You can just produce and manage force both ways. Change direction, right? Decelerate, accelerate. And then really handle the volume. Like, we really need to be able to, that stress, we need to be able to handle that physically. So that's my goal, is really to get people to go, huh, I want to think about this objectively, be critical about it, and then formulate a plan. And that's what our community is so good at, is formulating a plan.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, it's been a pleasure. For those of you who are watching, go to the description, check out all the links in there that have information on both of our programs, and, you know, find out for yourself and, you know, start learning, because it really is a journey of learning, all of this. It's not just one workout that you're going to do for the rest of your life. It is learning many different methods to train, and you know, you got to get good at everything if you're going to be a tactical athlete. You just can't be good at one thing.
For sure.
Yeah. All right, Jeff. Thanks a lot.
Anytime.